On Maxine Vonnebah Clark's first day at preschool, she was singled out for being different. She was 4 years old and had never really thought much about what it meant to be brown, as a fellow schoolgirl called her, in 1980s suburban Sydney. Maxine Vonnebah Clark is now an award-winning author, and in her new children's book, she takes that difficult playground memory and gives the story a happier ending. I asked Maxine to take me back to that first day of preschool.
I grew up in the white picket fence suburbs of New South Wales in a suburb called Kellyville, and the local preschool was, like most of the village, very white, very middle class. And my parents were black migrants. They came out here from the UK but were both born in the Caribbean. So I, up until then, I'd kind of been at home with my mum, hadn't really thought very much about the difference between me and other kids I might have encountered. But there was a little girl who kind of came straight up to me and said, "You're brown." And there was a definite negativity in her voice. And so it was something that was really confusing. And this was obviously a problem for her. And it became this refrain throughout my time at preschool.
You write about this moment in your memoir, The Hate Race, and you say, until then, as you said, the fact that you were brown hadn't meant much to you. How did that change in that moment?
I think it was the negative way in which it was said, and the fact that it was any time I would do anything, the thing that was perceived to be wrong, you know, like take the last piece of fruit at fruit time, that she would say, "You're brown and you're greedy." There was always something negative attached to it. And so I think it really put my head into the place about thinking about, well, what does this mean? Why is this something that's a problem for her? And so it was really the point at which I realised I'm different from a lot of the kids around me, and this is going to be a problem for some kids.
I mean, that's such a huge thing for a four-year-old to deal with. I wonder, how did the adults around you respond, the teachers or the parents?
I think in 80s Australia, early 80s Australia, this was something that, particularly where I lived, it wasn't talked about. You know, we're talking eight or so years after the official end of the White Australia policy, in terms of policy being changed about what migrants could come into Australia. So these were teachers who had been raised and grown up under the White Australia policy, and there was a sense of not wanting to talk about anything. Occasionally teachers would say stuff like, "Oh, but she has nice curly hair," or something like that. But this idea of singling someone out negatively for their difference wasn't really tackled.
And really, this moment as a four-year-old, this was kind of a sign for what was to come throughout your schooling years, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, I think as a direct result of the White Australia policy and the kind of upbringings the kids around me had had and their parents had had. And so this children's book is really trying to create a space for conversations to happen, so that if that happens to another child, it's not kind of, "Oh, just don't say that and we move on." Let's have a talk about why we're all different and why that's a wonderful thing.
You're meeting the author and poet Maxine Vonnebah Clark, whose latest children's book takes a childhood memory, a difficult childhood memory, and gives it a new ending. Maxine, the book is Wide Big World, and as you say, this story takes a different turn. What happens in your new version of this story?
So in this new version, it starts out similarly to my experience with a little girl pointing out that another child is brown. It happens in a kinder playground or preschool playground, and the teacher then really takes a lead role in a conversation, saying, "Well, I'm tall and, your baby."
"I'm hairy."
"Yeah, and I'm hairy." He's kind of this funky looking teacher with a bit of a coif. And, you know, "Your baby brother's small and bald and chubby, and everybody's different. And so let's have a conversation about the different things in this world." And it kind of takes you through the natural world as well, in terms of the sun balancing out the rain and different things in nature, and why this is what makes the world go round.
I also love the main girl who, when she gets told you're brown, she turns around, flashes a smile and says, yeah, I am.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, I mean, this idea of kind of, I guess I wanted the book to not only be a teaching tool for kids who may not have encountered difference, but to be something empowering for those kids who might be singled out to not shy away from that difference. So not kind of think, well, that's mean, think, well, yes, I am, and that's a fabulous thing.
So that's really interesting you say that, Maxine. This book is not just for the kids who are different. This is really an educational tool for all children. Is that the goal?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's illustrated by Isabel Knowles, who has illustrated several kids' books before, but she has a background in animation. And she's done a really great job of creating a schoolyard that is very inclusive. So, you know, the pictures are kids from all different backgrounds, kids with disabilities. So just looking at this idea of what makes a schoolyard and by extension, I suppose, what makes a society.
You have school-age children. How do you talk to your kids about race?
I think my kids have grown up in a very different world to what I grew up in terms of the world of their schoolyard. We live in Melbourne's West, so they go to a school that's extremely multicultural. And there are more open conversations happening in the school context these days about difference. And there tends to be, from what I've seen, more of a discussion about, well, let's have a talk about this. If someone's being bullied, let's actually talk about this as a class or as a group and, you know, why we need to appreciate each other's differences. And so those are the kind of conversations I have with my kids. I think issues like this come up a little bit less because of where I live and who my kids are. So they're, you know, they on my side, their grandparents are of Caribbean descent. On the other side, they're of Irish descent. So they've grown up with all kinds of different family members and friends and things like that in the household. So their world looks different to the world I grew up in. But, you know, the book still resonated with my youngest child, who's 8. And I think, you know, it's the kind of book where if you're not struggling with those kinds of issues, it's still a great book in terms of difference and just kind of looking at the world around you.
Because we are all different. Is it your hope that this book can add to that conversation, can change the experience for a kid in the playground?
I hope so. And I hope what it does is open those conversations so that that they're not shut down. I think the most harmful thing is to kind of, if there is a child who's unable to handle differences, to say, you just can't say that, as opposed to having a conversation about it. But I guess, as with all my work, I also just hope it's a good story.
And yeah. I wondered what it was like for you personally. You know, you started by telling us about that awful experience as a 4-year-old. Mm. To take that story and give it a happier, more hopeful ending, how does that feel for you to do that?
It feels great. And part of the reason I did it was kind of imagining when I was writing my memoir, and it was something where I really didn't ruminate much on my childhood until I was writing a memoir about it and thinking, what would it have taken for each situation to have ended differently? And in this case, it was, well, what if there had been a teacher who had said, you know what, everyone's different and it's nothing to be afraid of and it's nothing to be, you know, ashamed about or pointed out or ridiculed, and let's have a look at different things, you know, and the book kind of also goes through this pages where you see different animals like flamingos and, you know, there are some wonderful things in the world. And so it was very much rethinking that situation and actually what could it have been if the right things had been done.
On RN, I'm speaking to the Australian writer Maxine Beneva-Clark. Her memoir, The Hate Race, and her book of short fiction, Foreign Soil, are read all over schools in the country. And she now has a new picture book, Wide Big World. Maxine, what were the books that resonated with you when you were growing up?
When I was growing up, books that had diverse characters, which growing up in Australia before the internet age, there weren't many of them. So things Looking for Ella Brandy, Melina Marchetta's Looking for Ella Brandy, Sally Morgan's My Place, Judy Blume's Iggy's House, I think even things like people, that book People Might Hear You, that I think is about a young girl.
Yeah. John Marsden, I loved that book.
Yeah. And it's funny because it was totally outside of my experience. I think it was about a girl growing up in a religious cult or something like that.
That's right.
But there was something that really...
No, do you know, I got it wrong. It was Robin Klein. It was
Robin Klein.
I loved that book.
Yeah.
What led to you going from a reader to becoming a writer?
Just the desire to tell stories. I always loved writing my own stories. And I think in a sense, I mean, when I wrote stories as a young kid, other than having to write, you know, what happened on your weekend or something like that, I was very much writing fiction. And I wasn't writing black characters at all because it just wasn't something I saw. So it wasn't even within my realm of possibility to take myself and make myself a character. And in fact, I think up until my university years, I was not writing black characters. And I had a realization when I was at university studying writing that there is nothing in terms of African diaspora fiction, and not much in terms of African diaspora nonfiction in Australia. And so that's what I started writing. And just that power of realizing that you can control your own story and you can contribute to the national narrative was kind of addictive. I never stopped.
And now to know that your books are being read in schools across the country, it must be an incredible feeling to know that you've made that contribution.
Yeah, absolutely. I was visiting a school last week and one of the questions from one of the teachers was, what do you feel has been the biggest accomplishment in your writing career so far? And the answer was having books on the school syllabus. It seemed like something that when I was growing up, going through high school and reading George Orwell and James Austen and Shakespeare and things that I loved but didn't see myself in at all, to now know that there is a book on the syllabus that I would have loved and seen myself in is quite incredible. I still can't quite believe that it's happened.
You made that decision in university to write about the African diaspora experience, to write about race. You're writing about a part of Australia, when you write about racism in particular, that many Australians don't want to acknowledge. Mm. How hard is it to do that?
I think it gets easier. Putting out The Hate Race as a memoir was quite... writing it was quite difficult because there are a lot of quite painful memories and things that you've forgotten, they get dragged up and things like that. But actually seeing the reception and having people write to me and say, this was my childhood, and also having kids or you know, adults write to me and say, as a kid, I was that person who stood by and watched it happen and did nothing. And this is the first time I've actually, my mind has gone to what it would have been like for that person who was on the receiving end. And so to get that feedback, I think that's the point at which I say it's worth it. You know, it's worth all the hours at the computer and dragging up your personal life and putting it in a book and wondering what people are going to say about it. That's the moment at which I think, okay, this is, I know why I'm doing what I'm doing.
I believe some of your childhood bullies have also read The Hate Race. Have you heard from any of them?
I heard from one person who actually, interestingly enough, didn't feature majorly in The Hate Race, who Facebooked me and said, I'm really sorry, you know, I've read your memoir and I really apologise. And I was very immature and I said, it's fine, I'm famous now. And then sat at my computer chuckling. It was kind of that ultimate moment anyone who's been bullied wishes for. We could potentially have handled it better, I think.
Oh, look, you know, we never really grow out of those kids we are in primary school, do we? Maxine Beneva-Clark, what's next for you? What are you working on at the moment?
I've been editing an anthology called Growing Up African in Australia, which will come out early next year. It's published by Black Ink Publishing, and it's a collection of essays written by African diaspora Australians, which I think will be, I'm really looking forward to having a whole book full of writing colleagues from a similar background, and also working on a verse novel as well.
It must be nice to not just be you laying your soul bare this time, to share the load around a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels like it's a really exciting time in terms of Australian literature to have all of these stories that have been there all along, but that really haven't been given the airtime or the publication opportunity. And to just see them kind of actually getting out into the public is incredible.
Maxine Vinieba-Clarke, it's been so great to meet you today.
Thank you. Thanks.
Maxine Vinieba-Clarke's beautiful new children's book is Wide Big World. It's illustrated by Isabel Knowles and it's published by Lothian.